This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. It felt like a lifetime since we last saw Argyle play, as the international break dragged on forever. Not much happened in that week and a half, since beating Blackburn 3-0. Joining me tonight to preview Preston is the fist-pumping Sam Down. How's things?
Better if I remember to unmute myself. Yeah, very good, thank you. Yeah, very good. Looking forward to Saturday.
Nice. Dan Ellard, all good?
Yeah, very good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. John Allsop, evening?
Evening.
And to complete the clean sweep, a pod debut, Graham Clark, evening.
Evening all, good to be on.
Graham, just for the benefit of the listeners who don't know who you are, can you give us a quick introduction?
I started supporting Argyle in 1982 when I moved down to Plymouth. Before that, and I whisper it quietly, my family were QPR supporters, so my formative years were following the likes of Stan Bowles and Rodney Marsh, which was a very privileged football upbringing. But moving to Plymouth, people don't realise it, with a one-club city, it's entirely all about Argyle. And my first match was the Everton friendly Falklands charity game on Friday the 13th of August. But stood on the Mayflower Terrace behind the dugouts, and it was just a totally different experience that being a supporter of QPR, you were close to the managers. The abuse that the away managers got was fantastic. And I felt fully embraced very quickly, despite the quality of football not matching what I'd previously seen.
Yeah, I think we'll get on to abusing managers later on. That might be on the agenda. I'm not too sure. Apart from that first game, you're former chair of the Argyle Trust, is that right?
That's right, yeah, that came about. In fact, I got a phone call from the local MP, would you like to be on the Argyle Trust board, because there have been some problems with the board members that Sam probably remember. And I said yes. Then she phoned back, said, would you like to be chairman? I said, well, I haven't even met the committee yet. Okay. And then West Country phoned up, can you do a live TV interview? Then BBC phoned up, can you do a live TV interview? And I hadn't even told anybody I was chair of the trust. So that was the start. And of course, it was during the administration period, which was a terrible time for the club. And many heroes emerged with people like the Green Taverners, Sue Pollard and others, supporting the club and the people that weren't getting paid. Then we had Kevin Heaney trying to buy the club and Peter Ridsdale. I could tell you quite a few stories about Peter Ridsdale, but that may be for another time. And eventually, in October 2011, James Brent took over the club, and we were on our way, but it was a bumpy ride for quite a few years until Simon Hallett changed the fortunes of the club to where we are now.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get on to
another time.
Yeah, we're gonna jump onto a My Argyle Life, myself and Sam, and yourself, Graham, in the future. So I'm sure people will be interested in that one, and I'm sure we'll talk about Peter Ridsdale later on. But before we preview this Saturday's fixture away at Ryan Lowe's Preston, let's discuss a few things that have happened during the international break. Joe's appeal for new lyrics to the Ale 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 chant have been answered as Darren Way has left us. For Danny Mayer and Ryan Broom's Fleetwood Town to become assistant manager. Does anybody have any thoughts on his departure? It's mainly a question for Joe, this one, but he's not here, so.
I think, to be honest, I don't really know a lot about him as a person. Only really I knew of him as a manager from his time at Yeovil, and it seemed a bit of a coup to get somebody who'd been so recently a Football League manager to come and run our under-18s team. And he was there quite a few years, probably longer than maybe some people thought he would remain there. Obviously, the under-18s have produced some good players who've been integrated well into the team in recent years. Obviously, you know, I won't pretend to be an expert on how much of that was down to him and how much of that was down to, you know, Kevin Lansgiver, as head of player development and other people, and just the general improvements in professionalism around the club. But I'm sure he certainly played his part. The youth team have got some good results in recent years as well. And we've got a Saka coming through as well. And Will Jenkins-Davies out on loan, hopefully, you know, with the view of coming back, and a couple of others who could potentially make it as well, Caleb Roberts. So I think it's, you've certainly said it, for a number of reasons, the youth system's in a better place than it's been in quite a number of years. And I'm sure he's at least some part to do with that. But I guess for him, now he's got that chance to work in league football again. I know that he's very good friends with Lee Johnson, who's just got appointed at Fleetwood. I think they were each other's best men at their weddings, I think I saw the other day. So clearly they've obviously got a very close friendship, close working relationship. So yeah, I do wish him well at Fleetwood. And the words wishing well at Fleetwood aren't words I ever really thought I'd say a few years ago. But with him, Danny Mayer and Ryan Broom, I think I'd be girlish not to.
Yeah, I think I'm just glad that we don't have to hear that pugwash music again. Well, maybe until next year, but we'll see. Connor Hazard spent his break jet-setting across the globe with Northern Ireland, playing backup as Bailey Peacock Farrell, who's on loan at UA Rosler's AGRF Argus or something, currently sit fifth in the Danish Superliga. Dan, surely he's done enough already this season to be deserving of some minutes with Northern Ireland.
Well, it's tricky because, you know, in time it might well be that he loses his place in the team to Mike Cooper, and therefore it's going to be more difficult for him to justify a starting spot for Northern Ireland. But without having seen a lot of Bailey Peacock Farrell this season, I know that he had a bit of a kind of period of seeming a bit, you know, a bit kind of flappy at times, which made some people doubt whether he was kind of international standard. But, you know, it's difficult, and I'm not going to kind of say that Peacock Farrell's terrible and Hazard should definitely be ahead of him. But he's certainly going to give their manager something to think about if he keeps up these excellent performances for us.
His dad's nice, isn't he, Sam? Apparently.
Yes, indeed. We are for the Sheffield Wednesday Cup game in November 2011. Sort of boring story of the day for you here.
2011?
Did I say 2011?
Bailey Peacock Farrell was like 12 in 2011, I think.
I meant to say 2021. I misspoke. Yeah, I think I've got 2011 on the brain after what Graham said earlier. But yeah, in 2021, in the Wednesday Cup game, yeah, one of the lads who we were travelling up with was very good friends with the infamous Tango from Sheffield Wednesday, who obviously travels to England games home and away. And we were basically invited into the Sheffield Wednesday social club, which apparently was a bit like having the red carpet rolled out for you. There's not many away fans who get invited in there. And yeah, in there was Bailey Peacock Farrell's dad. We had a bit of a chat with him about how well he was doing at that time, because that was a bit of a breakout season for him. And yeah, he's obviously not gone on to really push on since as much as Cooper has and a couple of others have who were breaking through at that time. But yeah, clearly a decent keeper.
I don't know about Tango, but this is definitely a tangent. That's a good one. I didn't even write that down. Still no work permit for Bundu, who wasn't part of Sierra Leone's fixtures over the break. Is there any worry that he doesn't get a permit at all, John?
I don't really want to speculate because I just have absolutely no idea what's going on with that. I mean, the club have said it's all in regular order, haven't they? Although I don't know, does this mean he's not cleared for the unlikely to be cleared for the Preston game? Because I believe that Sam has a prediction where he comes on and scores twice on debut, a la Sam Cosgrove, after getting a similar amount of stick from our fans on social media when he signed for being seemingly rubbish. So
yeah, that prediction could be in jeopardy. I think he'd have to be registered by 12 p.m. or 5 p.m. the day before.
It's 12 p.m. on Friday is the deadline time.
Yeah, 12 p.m. Thanks, Graham. So I don't know how that would work legally, the grey area of could we in theory register him without a work permit and then, you know, subject to the work permit coming in, or could we only formally register after he's got one? I'm not entirely sure on how the technicalities of it would work. But yeah, even in the latter scenario, we've still only got, you know, 2 working days for that to get confirmed, haven't we? So unless it has just been confirmed and the club haven't announced it, I guess, which is always a possibility. But yeah, as far as we know, until we hear any otherwise, you wouldn't be in contention for the Preston squad, I guess.
I would just observe that the club have been pretty quiet for the last week or so during the international break. I think Shuey's been away for a few days. In terms of the permit, because of the number of international games he's played, there's no reason why a permit won't be granted because he's of the right calibre. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out at the press conference tomorrow that everything's okay. But just because you haven't heard doesn't mean that it's not.
We prefer to panic, Graham. We prefer panic.
I'm an older and wiser head. I don't do panic. I do considered thinking. I think
you won't fit in very well on this pod then, Graham.
No, I'm finding that out already.
On the lines of considered thinking and not panicking, obviously, it's another season where we won't pick up the St. Luke's Devon Challenge Cup after a 3-0 defeat to Biddeford. Any worries about that, Graham? No more silver. No,
very, very young team, really young youngsters. There was a couple of known players, but no, I mean, to be fair, Biddeford have always been a robust team in that league and very physical and strong, as against a team of youngsters. It's probably an expected outcome.
Yeah, somebody mentioned it on Twitter about potentially seeing like a Galloway or Gillespie appearance, but I don't think that would have been the wisest decision anyway. Should we move on to Preston then? That's basically why we're here, isn't it? Our first podcast back since the reboot discussed Stephen Schumacher's contract extension until 2027, meaning that this current incarnation of voices never got to speak in great lengths about Ryan Lowe. Before we preview this one, Sam, why don't you run us through your thoughts on Mr. Lowe and his move to Preston?
Yeah, look, I think it's easy that we can just say stuff that we'll get clipped up and we'll go well on social media. And I think, you know, that would be the easy thing to do. But I want to try and give a considered assessment, if I may. Look, I don't particularly like the way he comes across. I don't really like his public persona. And to be fair, this is not just the thing since he left us. Even when he was at Argyle, I was saying that. I think he's quite brash, quite arrogant in the way he comes across at times. And I think he's often very much more about promoting himself than promoting the collective. Schumacher, in a sense, I think is the total opposite of that. I think he's much calmer, so much more considered person, somebody who really tries to bring up other people and take the focus off himself. So am I glad that we have Schumacher over Lowe? Absolutely, because quite aside from all I've said, I think he's a much better manager as well. But I think the way that Lowe left and some of the tasteless comments he made about, oh, it was such an easy decision, they had no identity till we got there, he really, really let himself down with those comments. And I think that's why so many fans got their backs up at him and will have their backs up at him on Saturday. I'll try and give a positive assessment of his time as manager, because there's no denying whatsoever that his time as manager was more positive than negative. You know, for sure, he arrived when we had about 10 players, on our books in the sort of early to middle part of June. And then he left, you know, not 2.5 years later with us top of League One. So you can't argue with the job he did. That first season in League Two started slowly. I think in October, even early November, we were still sort of in upper mid-table, but we had that good run into the playoffs. followed by the really good run in January, which sort of ensconced us firmly into the top three. And then obviously the season ended with the, you know, freak event of COVID. And frankly, we just had really hit form at the right time and motored our way into the top three. Obviously, who knows how that season would have gone if it had run its course. I think we'd have been absolutely fine to go up. I think we were really just coming right into form. And I think we would have gone up maybe even as champions, but obviously we'll never know. That second season behind closed doors was a bit of a tough one in the sense that I think he and Lowe himself will be the first to admit that we got our transfer strategy a bit awry. We kind of front loaded the team quite heavily with attacking players and were sort of left with low knees.
Would you say that was more of a 6 out of 10 transfer window?
Well, that was a 5 out of 10 at best, more like a 4. Yeah, we didn't do, you know, we did well enough. We had a good run and we were, you know, mid-table in January, February, but then we had a sort of really, really dire final third of the season and in the end only stayed up by about, you know, 6 or 7 points, whatever it was. And then fair play to Ryan Lowe over the summer. He and Duke Snip sat down and they clearly identified exactly what the problem was. That we didn't have enough grit, enough experience in defence, enough sort of know-how, physicality. We went and brought in Wilson, Scar, Gillespie, Galloway, and completely remedied that. And it was an absolutely joyous first.
Sam, unfortunately, though, we did lose Will Ameson, Frank Nublay, and Ben Reeves, which, as all good lower league pundits speaking that summer knew, definitely was always going to condemn us to relegation to lose such an outstanding trio of League One players.
Yes, for Graham, who may not be aware of that joke in the listeners, that was what a very popular lower league podcast, which we won't name, said of our chances in the summer of 2021, that we were going to be disadvantaged by losing Ameson, Reeves and Nublay, which very much was not the case. But yeah, and then he left. I think realistically, I fully expected he would go as soon as a decent job came up north. And obviously, I wasn't really proven wrong by that. He did leave. And then the rest was history. The Schumacher era came after that. So look, my assessment of it would be I'm thankful to him for a lot of things. But the thing I'm most thankful to him for is bringing Stephen Schumacher to the club, because he brought Schumacher here as assistant manager. And goodness me, I don't think for a minute Lowe would have got us anywhere close to 101 points last season, with all due respect to him. So, yeah, good manager for us. Not somebody who I particularly like the cut of his jib very well. Not someone who I think conducted himself very well in the way that he left in a number of ways. But above all else, the man who brought Stephen Schumacher to Argyle, and for that he deserves our thanks to an extent.
Yeah, John, it's obviously been nearly 2 years since Lowe left before we get onto the game itself. How do Messrs. Schumacher and Lowe compare for you?
I don't know how Sam and others feel about this, but I sort of think when we look back on this era or chapter in Argyle history, it sort of does feel to me like the Lowe/Schumacher era. It sort of feels like a bit of a package, feels like there's a bit of continuity there. I mean, the decisive kind of break with a sort of past where failure was clearly too tolerated at the club, where we were by no means for all that period, but sort of seemed to get sucked into downward spirals too often. The decisive break with that seemed to me to come, you know, in the summer of 2019 when we bought in Lowe, which was, you know, at the time, a very, very ambitious appointment for a League Two club. Obviously, he was a very highly rated young manager at the time. I believe he'd just taken a very cash-strapped Bury side up to League One prior to them going out of business. So I think that was sort of a statement of, you know, we are going to go out and hire a very highly rated young manager with a sort of clear philosophy. We're going to start playing a certain way. And so I think it's only fair to say that while I completely agree with Sam that Schumacher is a better manager than Lowe, both temperamentally and tactically, and I think we'll go on to have the better managerial career, Lowe is a very good manager, clearly laid down some of the foundations on which, you know, Schumacher was able to build. It wasn't like Schumacher, unlike Lowe, was taking over a team that had just been relegated. He was taking over a team that at the time were, you know, if not top of League One, then very close to it. I think maybe in the top 5 or 6 by that point, after a couple of defeats in Lowe's final league games in charge. But Schumacher obviously came in to a club with positive momentum, whereas Lowe came into a club that I don't necessarily want to say had negative momentum. I mean, obviously we had just been relegated, but I think there was a sense that it was going to be a fresh start that season and that we would probably look quite strong for that league, whoever our manager was. But, you know, still to sort of turn us around from the complete catastrophe and underperformance of what we could have achieved at the previous season was, he did really, really well. It's compared to the two, I think it's a, you know, story of similarities and differences, right? On the one hand, you can see kind of similarities in their style of play. No surprise, you know, in that, given that they worked together so closely for, you know, that I think Lowe's entire managerial career until he went to Preston. But I think that Schumacher's teams are a bit more, it's a funny thing to say because Schumacher seems a bit more kind of sophisticated than Lowe as a character, in my opinion, but his teams are a bit more pragmatic, I think. I think some of us noticed actually that after Lowe left and Schumacher came in that first season, well, first half season that Schumacher was at the wheel, we actually sort of, for all his reputation for sort of nice crisp passing out from the back football, did play maybe a bit longer sometimes in games than we had done under Lowe. I think that Schumacher is less, as well, certainly, you know, so far in his managerial career, which isn't a huge sample size to go off, but so far in his managerial career, he's been a less streaky manager than Ryan Lowe, who was streaky both for us. I think he's been quite streaky at Preston as well. I think that's a testament more than anything to the fact that Schumacher just, you know, knows how to set a team up maybe that bit better than Lowe, certainly knows how to turn games around better than Lowe. And obviously it was quite a remarkable statistic last season that we went, you know, so many, the whole season, I think, without losing back-to-back games. Obviously that's not something that Lowe is really, really known for. And I think also, as Sam noted, the way they handle themselves in the media, Lowe more cocky and brash, and Schumacher a bit more sort of reserved and self-effacing, is obviously a very clear comparison. I think, you know, to just summarize, you asked me to compare the two. I went to the evening with Stephen Schumacher at Home Park on the cusp of the season, and Shuey and Lowe are friends, and Lowe's certainly spoken recently about how they, you know, wish their kids happy birthday and still text every day or whatever. But I thought there were a couple of little digs that Schumacher did make in Lowe's direction. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. But the one I most enjoyed, probably the comment I most enjoyed on the whole night actually was when Schumacher said something along the lines of, you know, unlike Ryan, who has an amazing talent for trusting his gut, I actually have to rely on data. Which I thought was, you know, an extraordinarily backhanded compliment, if ever I've heard one. And probably does actually speak to a reality of difference between the two in terms of, you know, attention to detail. You listen to that Schumacher Q&A session that evening, you listen to him speak generally, and it's really, really clear that this club is so fine-tuned at the moment in terms of, you know, using contracted data analytics and really kind of looking in very fine-grained detail at the types of signings that we're going to make. Under Lowe, I'm not saying none of that was in place. I'm certainly not saying that's not in place at Preston now, mostly because I have no idea. But yeah, he did always seem to be a kind of more trust-your-gut type manager. And I think in the modern game, that's probably going to get you less far overall than being someone who is that, you know, tuned in and clued into much more sophisticated performance indicators. Not that that, of course, can get you everywhere as well. So yeah, I think that's probably the difference between the main difference between the two as I see it.
Yeah, so far only two questions in. You and Sam have given me some great snippets that I can't wait to edit down and take completely out of context and have Preston fans shouting at you on Twitter.
I love to be shouted out on Twitter. So
you do, especially after your Bazunu calamity claims. I'm going to swap these two questions around, and I'm going to ask Graham the one about Ridsdale. So I've completely forgot your name there, Dan. Sorry, mate.
Cheers, mate.
you've seen a few managers in your time following Argyle. Where does Lowe rank for you, and does his departure ruin any of his success with us at all?
That for me.
I don't think his departure does. I mean, obviously, as Sam said, it's more the comments he made after his departure that were kind of the thing that sticks in the throat for Argyle fans, I think. He ranks pretty highly. I think you can't kind of deny just kind of looking at it on a kind of statistical level. Paul Sturrock technically only got us, well, especially technically only got us one promotion, but then technically didn't relegate us either. So, you know, you could argue that one either way. Obviously, Derek Adams got us one, but then took us back down. And obviously, Ian Holloway had some great times with him, but then he left in a very kind of not the best terms, let's say. So I think all of the, you know, really great managers we've had in my time supporting the club, yeah, it's not all been, you know, kind of perfect, you know. So
Aaron is furious at a major omission from your list.
Huge omission.
You can see him glaring from behind his
you're forgetting the man that kept us in the Football League, Dan, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, Carl Fletcher,
I was gonna say. That's yeah. And didn't see Shez coming in when we had 1 point from 9 games. Anyway, he was, I think, look, I adored a lot of the Derek Adams era, so I'm perhaps not kind of, I wasn't as over the moon when he was sacked. Obviously, it was the right thing to do, and he completely burned his bridges with us, and we needed that change. But his tenure created so many just wonderful memories for me, and I think probably as a circumstance of the fact that, you know, things out of our control, you know, COVID meant that we didn't quite have that same, were able to kind of create those same memories in Lowe's tenure. That said, we did have some brilliant results, a promotion, and a behind closed doors season that, whilst on the whole, was very mixed, because ultimately, you know, the objective was to stay up, and we did stay up, but there were a lot of pretty dire games watching on the telly, you know, throughout that period. Tactically, I think Lowe, it was quite innovative, you know, this whole kind of basically almost playing without fullbacks or wingbacks. I know they were kind of referred to as wingbacks, but they were kind of very much kind of pushed high up the pitch, almost as wide midfielders a lot of the time, which is something that, you know, I can't think of any manager, you know, that we've had that's done that before. And it was a reasonable style of play. But I think it's just kind of been eclipsed by the incredible stuff that Schumacher's done since he's come in and taken over. Because as good as I think Lowe was and is tactically, I think Shuey is more proactive. I think he is less kind of set in his ways in terms of, you know, how many managers would, having come off the back of 101-point season, go, right, we're going to scrap the 3-at-the-back system, and now we're going to go to 4-at-the-back for our championship season. You know, that's the kind of level of detail and of thought that Schumacher's putting into this. Whereas I think, you know, I think if Lowe we saw it. Lowe got us promoted and stuck with a kind of 3-1-4-2 that he liked to play, which, you know, was a system that obviously kind of worked more than it didn't. So I'm not going to criticise it too much, but it's a little bit, yeah. I just think that level of kind of proactivity tactically that Shuey has puts him a grade above Lowe.
I would agree with much of what Dan said. As far as I'm concerned, from what I've seen over the last near enough 2 years that Shuey's been at the wheel, as it were, we are in the presence of probably somebody that will be regarded as Argyle's best ever manager for all sorts of reasons. Paul Sturrock Mark I deserves all the accolades because he had a set way of playing home and away, and it was very successful, and it was a fabulous team spirit that engendered. I put Ryan Lowe on par with Ian Holloway. He's the sort of Pied Piper, gut response type manager, so-called motivator, but has to rely on somebody as an assistant manager. And it's quite notable with Ryan Lowe's success at Preston, and it is a success. Mike Marsh is probably the equivalent to what Shuey was at when Ryan Lowe was at Argyle. So with Shuey, I mean, as Dan alluded to, we had a fantastic season last year playing some great football. Who would have thought that you'd go from the system we played to the 4-3-3 we play now And I know it's early days, but the evidence of the first five or six games has been incredible. That transformation to get that group of players with incomers too, to switch to that formation at such a level is a remarkable on-grass coaching achievement. And nobody should underestimate it. Some of the free-flowing movement, the interchanging of positions. I read that Arteta at Arsenal said that he made 53 tactical changes during the game against Man City. And if you look at Shuey, he's always adjusting. All the players are always moving and adjusting. And if you look at KKH, he appears on the other side of the pitch. You think, what the hell is he doing there? And then you realise how other players have just slipped into that position naturally. And it's a remarkable, free-flowing, energetic, high-press and hugely entertaining approach, which none of us expected at Championship level. Obviously, you know, it's a long season ahead and Saturday's game will be a big test for us for all sorts of reasons, because Preston are top on merit because they've won four and drawn one. But comparing Shuey and Lowe, Shuey's a thinker. The data analytics that he's embraced has improved us immeasurably. Ryan Lowe is a gut manager, as I said, a motivator. In the long run, Shuey's approach will prevail. It's the right thing for Argyle to adopt, and I'm just loving it. And if you compare the two as characters, yeah, Ryan Lowe can be shooting at the mouth, but Shuey's just the most humble, humility, respectful. And the bit I really love about him is he gets the city, he loves the city. And that's something that, with the exception of Paul Sturrock perhaps, and to an extent Derek Adams, other managers don't do. They seem to be passing through onto somewhere else. But with Shuey, he wants to be here. He knows he can build something really, really good. And we're on the pathway to doing that.
Yeah, so is it not only Ryan Lowe we face off against Peter Risdale too, not the greatest legacy in football after his stint at Leeds, but Graham, how do we assess his time with us? Obviously, you might be best placed to answer this one, but we owe him some thanks, right, for keeping us alive?
Yeah, I mean, interesting. I mean, he suddenly appeared from a walking holiday that miraculously ended up in Plymouth. But I think he was invited by Paul Stapleton to see how they could help get out the ridiculous financial situation they were in. He clearly saw it as an opportunity. And it clearly, in his eyes, we were going to go into administration. He organised Brendan Guilfoyle as the administrator who he'd worked with before and saved, I think it was Bradford Bulls, and I think it might have been Huddersfield. And he saw it as an opportunity. And I mean, to be honest, I quite liked him as a person. He was very personable. He listened, but it was all about him. I would always say, when we had meetings with him as part of the trust and the contingency group, I would sit next to him and he would always have two Blackberries. And if you remember, Blackberries were the forerunner of the iPhone, I think, why would anybody have two Blackberries? Why do you need two? And he'd leave one on the desk and he'd be making a call outside and coming back. And there was always a level of distrust about his intentions. And yes, he saw it as an avenue to take over a football club and restore his position in the game. But in truth, Argyle wouldn't have been saved without what he did. Because once James Brent was the preferred bidder eventually after the Heaney fiasco that Ridsdale was aligned to, he worked tirelessly with the PFA and the FA to get the five-year payback deal agreed by all parties. And without that, Argyle would not have been saved. James Brent could not have done the deal with the City Council. And then he played a part in getting 300 signatures because all the football creditors had to agree. And if one didn't agree, then the whole deal might have fallen apart. I think one was even in prison. They had to get his signature in prison. So it was a tremendous task. It was done within 4 weeks. It was a 4 week period. And then obviously James Brent acquired the club, wasn't a football man. So he did rely on Peter Ridsdale, who called himself director of football operations, whatever that means. And but as soon as I think Hemmings gave him the call, can you come and sort Preston out? He was off. And well, he's done what he's done at Preston. You know, they've been a sustained championship club for a while, now the top of the table. But yeah, I mean, you wouldn't trust him as far as you could throw him, but he did play a major part in saving Argyle. And if I'm unlikely to see him on Saturday, but if I did, I would thank him, because it's the behind the scenes work that he did. And I know James Brent would be the first to say how he helped him in the football matters, which was crucial to getting the players and the football creditors on side.
Yeah, like we said previously, we'll jump in and do a deep dive with yourself about, I'm sure you've got plenty more stories to tell us about your time with the Fans Trust and in company of the likes of Ridsdale and co.
You forgot to add in the break, didn't you?
Should we call that a break?
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Preston themselves have invested heavily, or, you know, for them at least, over the summer. Any thoughts on their additions, John?
Well, I think they did not include Tom Cannon in the end, which I would imagine Lowe was kind of waiting the whole summer to see if he could get him back after he was so good on loan there from Everton up front at the back end of last season, but he ended up going...
I can imagine that Lowe despised the idea of getting £8 million to Everton, to be honest.
Yeah, I can imagine that. He's not sure, he is. He's trying to remind myself where Cannon went in the end. Leicester, of course, that was right, because he was linked with a variety of clubs in the final week of the transfer window. Yeah, in terms of their other business... I think who they signed, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't a hugely memorable transfer window, even though they did bring in a number of players. I'm going to try and pull it up now. I mean, Will Keane, off the top of my head, has obviously had a very good start to the season. And I think maybe a bit deceptively for a player who played for a team that went down last season, has maybe not had a particularly amazing career at championship level, for the system that they seem to play, is a handful up front. I think it's probably a very, very solid championship goalkeeper. Signed Dwayne Holmes, I think, from Huddersfield, which I wasn't a huge fan of as a piece of business, to be honest, but he has apparently been really good in these first weeks of the season.
I think he's a very good player. Very good player, Holmes.
Yeah, he's all right. I'm not a huge fan of his, to be completely honest, but so far this season, proving me wrong. The other one that seems worth mentioning is this guy, Mads Frøkjær Jensen, who is very highly rated, even though I don't know an enormous amount about him, but came in for a pretty decent transfer fee, and I can't really think of anyone they lost apart from Cannon
and Liam Delap.
Yeah, well, Delap had been there on loan, right? Was that where he was last season?
I think he was.
He had a pretty disastrous season last year on loan in the Championship, Delap, but has started very well at Hull this time around. I'm trying to remember what happened to Delap. I think he had two loan spells. Yeah, so you're right, Preston. Yeah. One goal in 15 games this year. He had been at Stoke in the first half of the season and not done an enormous amount better in terms of goals registered. Daniel Johnson went there from Preston, you know, at the age of 106 or whatever he is now, for a player who feels like he's been playing for Preston North End literally forever, and is probably about 27 after I said that. But yeah, I don't know. wouldn't say it was a game-changing transfer window for them, and I'm sure we'll come on to this, but I think their league position is false at the moment. But, you know, a pretty solid one, given the resources they have, which are not, you know, earth-shattering for the level. I just want to ask quickly on the subject of transfer windows, since the last time we recorded the second tier podcast, our enlightened friends there ranked Argyle's transfer window as the second best in the entire championship, and the two hosts' individual best signings in the entire league were respectively Morgan Whittaker and Ballymumba. So, Sam, I was just wondering if you would stick with your 6 out of 10 analysis for our transfer business over the summer.
I think that you'd already more or less talked me into 7, haven't you? Okay. I think you'd already more or less talked me into 7. I'm sticking with 7 just because of the lack of possibly an out-and-out striker if the reports that Bundu's more of a winger are true.
They were very excited by the signing of Bundu, which I'm sure was based on an encyclopedic knowledge of his game and having seen him play over the last several years.
Of course.
Oh, so you're done.
Yeah, I can keep going if you want. I'll get your whole bit on Will Keane if you want, but the divine ponytail or the divine top knot, maybe.
I would just like to say, John, as well, that they took off Frukje Jensen at halftime in their last game away at Stoke and brought Holmes on. And when it was 0-0, and Holmes got an assist for one of the goals, and they won 2-0. So make of that what you will.
Dived and won a penalty, was that the week before? He won an extremely dubious penalty in one of the last two games, for sure.
Do we know whether Will Keane is actually playing? Because I thought he was injured.
Well, he scored twice for them in the last game.
I think he got injured on international duty.
Oh, you mean on Saturday?
Yeah, I believe.
No, I didn't see that.
No. But you're not watching Ireland games? That could be offensive. He could be from Northern Ireland. I don't know.
Not watching England games either, to be fair. So.
One of them. Yeah, fair enough. The identity famously left behind by Ryan Lowe has changed somewhat under Schumacher. You've already done a bit of a tactical deep dive, Dan, so I won't ask you to go over that. Obviously, especially this season, reverting to a back four. How do you see our trip to Deepdale going?
Well, I'm not sure, but I was thinking about what I would potentially see us doing. And whilst I would keep the, you know, I don't think we need to go too radical, I would perhaps tweak what we normally do and play a double pivot in front of the back four rather than a kind of single holding midfielder and the two higher up. The reason for that being is that Preston, mainly this season under Lowe, by the looks of it, are kind of playing the Schumacher system from last season, the kind of 3-4-2-1, with those two attacking midfielders behind front man. So if we did play that single guy in there, I think they could kind of, you know, they could overwhelm us in that area. So I think playing a double pivot in there and trying to kind of man mark, I suspect it will be Holmes and Alan Brown. So to kind of play two players in there, man mark them out of the game, hopefully, and then have the one guy kind of sitting further forward linking with the forward players is perhaps, you know, the way I'd go. In terms of personnel, probably Houghton and Randall in there. I think, you know, Cundall and Azaz have done a very, very good job over previous weeks in terms of being, you know, creative outlets, getting us up the pitch. But I think, yeah, if to play that double pivot, I think I'd rather have Randall in there alongside Houghton in terms of, you know, receiving the ball from a goalkeeper or defender, playing on the turn back to goal and then getting us up the pitch. I think we'll have to go there and show them a little bit of respect given their record and given their start to the season. I don't think we need to kind of sit into a really kind of negative low block, but it's another one of those, as I've said before on the pod, I just kind of trust Schumacher to do the right thing, really. You know, it's not, yeah, we all kind of, you know, have said in the past, you know, I can't believe this manager's not doing this and this manager's not doing that. And it's very easy to say that. And you obviously say it with the knowledge that they're professionals and you're not. But right now, it's just that complete trust in Schumacher that he'll do the right thing. He might not, you know, we might play 4-3-3 and we might win and it'll work. Basically, he'll see it before basically anyone else does. So, yeah, but looking forward to it. It should be a really, really good game. Atmosphere will, I have little doubt, be fantastic. I'm not sure Sam will probably know roughly how many tickets we've sold at this point.
We'll get on to that.
Right, okay. Nearly stole another question.
No preempting questions. No preempting Aaron's questions.
we're pretty good at that normally. My first away game of the season, and I can't wait.
Yeah, before we get on to obviously that one, I'll come back to you, Graham. Actually, you know, you've already mentioned it. Preston surprisingly sitting top of the championship. Do you see us having enough to knock them off that perch?
Well, it's a question of how bold we want to be. And I remember we tried to be bold against Sheffield Wednesday last season. It didn't quite work. But I think the 4-3-3 is based on pace and energy. And I would rely on pace and energy to win the game. And in terms of the back four, it depends. I don't think Preston have got a sort of target man approach. So do you need Dan Scar? Would Plaguey be better at sort of playing the football, coming out with the ball, spreading it wide like he did it in the last home game? I would think about Mikkel Miller at left back because of his pace. Him and Barley Mumba down that left hand side being an irresistible combination. I'd like him to be bold and attacking because that's our forte. Whether he will be on, you know, he wouldn't want to lose the game. I would take a point now, but I don't necessarily think we have to sit back. I would like us to go right out at them with pace, with energy. And I think Luke Cundall is probably the best place to do that. His energy in the middle, the ball recovery. I think the game is going to be won and lost in the middle of the pitch. And who has the ball the most, who recovers the ball the most, and who uses the ball the most. In terms of fitness, I'm pretty sure we're as fit as anybody. Last season we came on strong every game, and this season we've more or less done the same. So if we can keep the energy levels up, the kilometres in the legs, I think we've got a good chance of winning it. And not many teams in the Championship play with such wide players as Barley and Morgan, absolutely stuck on the touchline, very much like Man City did pre-Haaland, with Ryan Hardy running those channels. It's a different way, and I'm not sure Preston would have faced that type of football yet. I'm optimistic. Obviously, I don't want to come away with a defeat, and I'd settle for a draw, but I just want us to be bold, and if we're bold and play with energy and take our chances, and we've been really good at taking our chances so far this season, then I think we could nick it, and I'd love it.
Yeah, Sam, do you subscribe to the idea that certain players will have a point to prove, you know, like a Dan Scar and maybe a Joe Edwards, you know, against after Lowe's departure?
Maybe. I don't know about point to prove, because I think in the sense that Lowe brought them into the football club. And again, to be fair to Lowe, to give credit where due, he pretty much revived the careers of both of them. It's easy to forget that Joe Edwards has been released by a side who'd just been relegated into League Two in Walsall. So they were relegated along with us, I think, that season, weren't they? So in the 08-09, in the 18-19 season, they were relegated with us, and then Joe Edwards was released. So it's easy to forget he wasn't wanted for League Two, and not only was he good in League Two, he was good in League One, and now he's more than holding his own in the Championship. So it's Lowe pretty much revived the careers of some of them, or at least Argyle did as a club. So I don't have that point to prove. Yes, look, we've all said what we think about some of the comments he made. Whether that will really rile up the players in the same way, I'd like to think it would. Don't get me wrong, but I don't really think they're probably that invested in the fan warfare, if you like. I think to them it will be another game to an extent, but obviously they'll be desperate to win.
Frank Newblay and Will Ameson will be very fired up. I'm hearing.
Yeah, they will.
Well, whilst we've got you, Sam, have you got your costume ready for Saturday? If you're on social suggesting that there's going to be a fancy dress theme?
No, well, We'll keep within the grounds of legality and good taste, and I will absolutely not be wearing any fancy dress, though.
Why not?
Next question.
obviously, the atmosphere at Stadium MK shortly after Lowe's departure was fantastic. Do you think it'll be more of the same, John, on Saturday?
I don't know.
Or better?
No, I think that those of us who travelled to that MK Dons away game, it was sort of a weird confluence of factors of quite a small group, and therefore everyone was sort of banded together in the cold singing. It was just after Lowe left, so there was that kind of fresh animosity and sort of bunker spirit to it. And also, crucially, Stadium MK had about 6 home fans in it, so you could hear us loud and clear from the away end, as was also the case last season, because they are the smallest club in the country.
And on Sky, and the slow-mos of the goal celebrations were fantastic. But
yeah, with the flying fan. Who went down the side of the sort of seating covers. So yeah, I think that was a moment in time that might not necessarily be replicated. I do want to stress, actually, because we were all kind of actually quite complimentary and nice about Ryan Lowe earlier, that one of football's great pleasures is Schadenfreude, bearing a grudge, and being able to take your frustration out on pantomime villains for an hour and a half or so every Saturday afternoon. And I think Lowe has absolutely earned that status among Argyle fans. And I would hope that he's given, within the bounds of legality and good taste, a very hostile reception. As Dan and Sam alluded to earlier, the way he left the club was completely out of line. I think pretty much everyone in the fan base would have understood him going to a bigger club and going back up north to be nearer his family, given, that was clearly... his ambitions were clearly in that direction at the time, but to leave with those cheap shots about us basically having no fans and no atmosphere until he came in, and no identity, which is obviously something that cuts right to the core of what it means to be a football club and a fan base, was gratuitous and nasty. And yeah, and it's our first meeting with him since then. And I hope, I hope we give him some stick. That being said, I've seen, in terms of will that happen, seen a number of comments on social media suggesting that we should bury the hatchet. So I'm sure there'll be some who'll try and give him a round of applause. So I guess it depends on the balance of who's in the stadium. I would imagine that he will get a pretty hostile reception, but I think I'm moderating my expectation of just how hostile that'll be down a little bit. Ultimately there's a great positive energy around our club at the moment. I think that's probably the dominant emotion going into the game rather than hostility. But if anyone knows how to awaken that hostility, it's Ryan Lowe, and I'm sure an insensitive fist pump here or derogatory, demeaning comment there would get the passions fired right up again. So we'll see.
Or a run down the touchline towards us when they go 1-0 up. Oh God, I would get very angry at that. So you're saying less? What's the word? You know me, I don't know words, which isn't good.
Let's go with febrile.
Animosity of that Leicester away game, 90 minutes of chanting Holloway.
I wasn't there, so you'd have to ask Sam for that.
I wasn't there, believe it or not for that one.
Oh.
The similar one, though, the similar comparison would probably be Wolves at the end of that season when, whilst it was nothing to do with the game that we were watching, Leicester obviously got relegated that day, and it was non-stop Holloway related chanting and joy, and despite the fact that we lost the game in the last minute, which was one of the more surreal away games I've been to.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't repeat the chant there. Moving on to a Twitter question, and to be fair, it was one that I was going to ask anyway, so it just saved me a lot of time because I just screenshotted it. PASE Ryan says, where are the apparent 40,000 fans who have no chance of getting an away ticket, and now they actually have a chance to get them? We're hearing we haven't even hit 2,000 for Preston on Saturday. I don't know who wants that, but
if I could take that one first, obviously anyone else can jump in after. I think it absolutely and totally vindicates the club decision, in my opinion, to have a priority tiered system based on points. Because
do we know it's true that it's 1,500? I have no idea where that figure's come from.
Well, I suppose we don't know it's true because the Argyle ticketing account never puts out figures. I don't know why. I think that would actually help sales. But
I mean, Preston have an enormous away end, right? I think I'm right in thinking. So it's very possible that we've sold what by any other week would be a hell of a lot of away tickets, and we just haven't
Yeah, I believe we were, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we were only given 2,000 the first allocation and we haven't sold those, so.
That makes sense then.
And yeah, and I think our goal would generally make a bit more of a point of bigging it up if it was a good number. So, well, look, we could be totally wrong and maybe we'll turn up there and we've got the total wrong end of the stick and there's, you know, many, many thousands of fans, by the way, and I don't think there will be. I think, as they were going to say, it totally vindicates, in my opinion, the decision to go for a ticketing tiered based system. Because, and look, before I go into this, I don't want this to be taken out of context. Is this not in any way a dig or belittling people who don't go to every away game at all? That's not what it's intended to be. But when you hear comments after the Watford game, after the Birmingham game, about how, oh, you know, it's the closed shop, nobody will ever get any, be able to get any tickets ever. This is how you get tickets to those games, by going to the sorry to say, the lesser populated away ends, like Preston, like Hull in a few weeks' time. And I'm sorry, you know, if, and I know it is a bit further up the road, and I get that, and I know it's maybe a longer day, you know, people who are driving, I'm not here to judge, but when people say it's a closed shop and nobody will ever get a chance of going to away games, that's just not the case. Yes, Watford is going to be tough because it's relatively local by our, you know, geographically distant standards, and Birmingham for the same reason. This is a game where people, if people want to go and watch Argyle away, absolutely would have had every chance to do so. And I kind of think that whilst, again, not in any way a criticism of people not going, I want to make that clear, but I kind of feel that some of the people who were moaning sort of can't really have their cake and eat it. You can't really moan about it being a closed shop and moan about priority, but also, you know, not take the chance to go to games when those games are there. So in my opinion, for me, it shows the club should, in my opinion, stick to their guns on having a tiered-based point system. Interestingly, I did notice the Bristol City, they kind of dropped the tiered-based point system, whether that's just a one-off for that game or something they're trialling. Look, I don't know. But for me, it says that the priority system should be here to stay. And, you know, for the games later in the season that are going to cause a real scramble for tickets, games like West Brom, Cardiff, Swansea even, that should be here to stay, in my opinion.
Is it also worth mentioning that Birmingham, we probably only sold out because half their stadium was shut? Mm. Like, our allocation would have been a hell of a lot more, would it not?
Yeah, exactly, Dan. So I think, look, the amount of games in which the priority tier point system will actually be needed is very few. But for the games in which it will be needed, the likes of West Brom, which is a relatively small away end, the likes of Cardiff, which is a smallish away end and nearby our standards, for those games, the club should absolutely stick to their guns, in my view, yeah.
Whatever they're trialling for Bristol City, Sam, I think the ticketing arrangement is likely to culminate in quite a lot of distress among the fan base. Yeah, it'll all end in tears.
Oh, I mean, can I just say that if we do take 2,000, you've got to bear in mind the coaches are leaving 4:30 in the morning for a 7-8 hour journey up. That's a pretty remarkable.
Oh yeah, for Preston. Sorry, I thought you meant for Bristol. Then I was like, I hope they're not. But yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yes. So 2,000 fans doing that journey and getting back whatever time. If it wasn't Preston, we'd all say it was a remarkable achievement for the club. You know, like Argyle, to get that many that far. And that's how I see it. Not everybody's going to go there just to have a go at Ryan Lowe. They're going to make their judgment. It'd be interesting. I don't know whether we sold out for Bristol City yet, but the Preston away end is 5,700 capacity. So we're never, if ever there was a chance for anybody to go, that is it. It's the biggest away end in the Championship. As Sam says, the club have got it right. If people want to get points to go to more away games, this is an ideal opportunity, but you've got to travel.
Here.
Without wishing to be pernickety and go all kind of data on that tweet and Sam's response to it, like, this is extremely anecdotal, right? The people we're referring to here whinging about not being able to get away tickets is like about 10 people on free chat over the last couple of months who very much could all have bought tickets for Preston the minute they went on general sale, as far as we know, right? Like, I don't necessarily know if we're... I think we should be careful that we're, you know, we're actually characterising a real phenomenon here rather than, you know, confirmation bias and what have you. So yeah, there we go. That's my two
cents. On the ticket scheme as a whole, because I'm not sure we actually have covered it properly, but I'm actually for it, even though it excludes me from certain games, you know, as a non-season ticket holder that lives away from Plymouth. I'm actually for a point system for games like you know, our Exeter's away and our Bristol City away, etc. But the games that it's for are those close ones, and then we didn't use it at Bristol and we've not sold out anyway. So is there any real point in having it at all? I don't know. But maybe that's a discussion for another time. That's pretty much it, unless anybody's got anything to add on Preston.
I mean, we haven't. Have we discussed their vaunted early season league position very much? I mean, I mentioned that I think it's false. I'm interested to hear what other people think about that. But I don't particularly fear them going into this one, I have to say, which is not to say I'm going to be hubristic when making my score prediction in a moment necessarily. But I don't think the calibre of team they've played so far has been particularly high, with the probable exception of Sunderland, who I think are a really good side, who just had a particularly slow start and played Preston during that. But, you know, their underlying data isn't amazing. I think they played quite a few teams who are, I expect, to be down there or to underwhelm, or just teams where they're going to be sort of mid-table sides and Preston have just come out on the right side of those. I guess the case against it could be that you might have said the same thing about us when we were top under low in October of 2021 or 2011, as Sam would call it. We did manage to actually stick there pretty much until he left. So I don't know if anyone else has a thought on that, but I'd be curious to hear it. So
I think you can't underestimate the 2-0 away win at Stoke.
I mean, I think Stoke are rubbish, though, unfortunately. So I do underestimate it a bit. They get hyped up by the same pundits every single year, and every single year they're rubbish. And I'm just not going to accept that they're good until they've proven it to me, I'm afraid. But you might be right.
As a former employee of Norwich City Football Club, which I may or may not mention on this pod every week, I'm just a massive fan of Alex Neil, and I think he's a great bloke, so I don't want to hear any Stoke-based slander.
That's not working for him so far there. He had almost a whole season last year, and they were terrible. And they're 17th this season so far.
He's had his own transfer window, where he's basically brought in all of Preston's rejects that he had at Preston. So, you know,
I might explain why Preston beat them then.
It might get better.
It's winning at Stoke is a good result. Fair, even though I don't think they're very good. In seriousness, it's a good result, but teams will have good results. I mean, I guess the question is Preston sort of looking up really at a serious playoff push or even something better, which is what their current run of form would indicate, of course, if extrapolated over the course of a season? Or is it just a case of a cluster of kind fixtures and a couple of impressive performances against better sides dotted in among it that will kind of even itself out when the law of averages takes effect a few more games in? I don't know. I think I personally am leaning towards the latter.
Well, look, they're probably not going to win the league, let's be honest. So you could say they are in a false position just based on that. But
yeah, I mean, well, obviously God and the laws of nature have dictated that Ipswich Town will win the league, and as is their birthright. So
I think you mentioned that Ryan Lowe is streaky in his results, and that happened a bit last season where he didn't score a goal for...
Yeah.
A team didn't score a goal for many games. Yeah,
they scored one goal in six games and conceded zero goals in six games.
Playing attacking football, as he would say. So I don't think Preston are playoff material. I might be proven wrong when we see them play. I'm hoping for a sort of Leicester-type game where we nick it 1-0, and I'd be very happy with that. I can see us doing it, to be fair. Yeah.
Is that what you're going for, a 1-0 win?
Yeah, a 1-0. 1-0 win.
I'm going for a 3-2. Sorry, go on, Graham.
No, go on. I was going to ask Graham who he was going to predict his goal scorer, Sam. But...
Oh, right, Ryan Hardy would score.
Yeah, fair enough. Sam, I reckon you'll go for like a 3-2.
3-2 win, yep, you got it. Spot on. With Bundu getting the winner, and then Graham will come back in the pod and prove that we were right not to panic about Bundu's work permit. Yeah.
John, do you share those Bundu-based...
I'm really conflicted about it. What I do think is, I think it'll be a tight game one way or another. So I guess I'll sit on the fence and say 1-1. I could see them doing us over in a similar fashion to what Birmingham did the other week, where they didn't really deserve it, but they sort of ground out a win just by having that little extra bit of championship experience and quality. Equally, I could see us nicking it. So yeah, I'll go straight. I'll split the difference and say 1-1, which I would be very happy with, for the record.
Well, Sam said to me in the pub after the Blackburn game that he had a funny feeling that we'd be the team that would end Preston's unbeaten run. Like, we'll be their first loss.
We'll lose then.
And
I quite like that. I think that's that sticks with me as well. So I'll go 2-1 win, and let's say Whittaker and Callum Wright.
Yeah, for me, it's every time I think we're going to win, we lose. And so I tend not to get too positive. And I also know and I appreciate Joe shot me down last week when he said about playing the occasion. We're not very good at playing the occasion, as a la Wembley. Yeah, I'm going to predict a 3-0 loss, hoping that that doesn't come true.
Is this an occasion, though? I mean,
It's not an occasion. Wembley wasn't an occasion.
Well, I would argue.
Well, I was going to say this game matters, unlike Wembley. So you know,
we got battered at Wembley. So,
well, I'd be very surprised. Like, I think Shuey is the sort of guy who will definitely want to get one over on his mate. But I don't think that there'll be this kind of burning rival animosity on the player's part. I really don't. I think they'll just approach it as a normal game.
Yeah,
I hope so. Like they did at Wembley, approach it like a normal game, taking selfies an hour before kickoff, and getting battered by Ian Evatt, who's been in the news recently. Should we finish on a quiz?
As long as I haven't got anything to do with Ian Evatt, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly turn my camera off.
It's a quick quiz. Oh, I reckon Sam will get them all right. Basically stolen the name from the second tier pod. They call it Higher or Ryan Lowe or something. So I've just changed the word Higher to Schumacher, so it doesn't really work. Schumacher or Ryan Lowe. Question number one, heaviest defeat as an Argyle manager, Lowe or Schumacher?
Oh, a Lowe.
Ryan Lowe 6-0.
Yeah, it's Charlton.
Who beat a 6-0 under Lowe?
Oh, Charlton, wasn't it?
COVID season.
The worst ever performance at home park.
Oh, yeah, they did. I completely erased that from my mind, thankfully. I think I don't recall watching that. I think I was out or so. Well,
and no one booed at full time. Honestly, our happy clappy fans or something else.
I think it was behind closed doors. That's why.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
The sarcasm got missed there, I think.
Sarcasm over Zoom. Yeah.
That's because John wasn't there. Shuey's biggest loss was obviously a 5-0 against MK Dons, which we like to forget about. Whose club has scored more this season?
Schumacher.
Yeah, Schumacher, I think it does.
No, it's a trick question. Both
I think we're level.
Yeah, we're level. Point to Graham. Which manager has taken more wins against Joey Barton in their managerial career?
Oh,
is it Schumacher with only one?
I think it's low.
It's not very high, you're right, yeah.
Do you include the...
all competitions.
Oh, yeah, we beat Rovers twice last season, didn't we? Yeah.
Well, no, we drew and won on penalties in one of them, actually.
Yeah, we beat Rovers twice last season, didn't we?
It's Schumacher has 3 wins over Barton. Lowe has 2. This one's a pretty easy one. You'll all get this. Days in charge at Argyle.
Lowe.
Which one's higher?
Lowe, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Yep. And then win percentage as manager of Argyle. This is all competitions as provided by Greens on Screen. So if it's wrong, shout at them.
Gotta be Shuey.
Yeah.
Ryan Lowe has a 44% win ratio. Steven Schumacher has a 42.9, so he's actually lower.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah.
Really? You looked at the right figures.
Yeah. I was shocked.
Is that right?
Blame Greens on Screen, not me.
I'm just going to have a look now.
I'm gonna double check that as well whilst you're doing that.
I'm amazed by that.
Yeah. No,
that's
not
right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking all competitions, you know, maybe, but even then.
We had the cup run.
I thought so. Run was under both of them, to be fair, but yeah.
Hang on, there isn't a win percentage for all competitions, it's just in cups. Anyway, we'll leave it there.
There we go, okay.
We'll leave it there. Greens
Steven Schumacher has a 59.7%.
There we go, see?
That is incredible.
42.7.
This is why we've brought you in, Graham.
So you were looking at just the cup result.
I was. I noticed that as soon as correct.
Well, I knew it from memory.
I normally correct it in the group chat afterwards, but anyway, yeah. I think we'll call that a night.
Thank you.
All good?
All good. And I assume I'll see all four of you at Deepdale.
Yep.
We will. See you there.
See you there.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Right.
Cheers.
That's the end of another episode of Green and White brought to you by Argyle Life. Before you go, please make sure you drop us a review on whichever podcast platform you are using, and make sure you follow us on Twitter at ArgyleLife1886. Cheers.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.